Depends on how you look at it.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. Happy Friday. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The nation's economy retreated in the first quarter of this year. That's no surprise. Today, the government revised its number that shows... Now, hold on. The government retreated in the first quarter of the year. We're going to talk about that in a minute. First, where's Wall Street? Flat, pretty much. The S&P 500 down about a tenth of a percent. Same for the NASDAQ. The Dow down, you guessed it, about a tenth of a percent. Asian markets closed higher. European shares are up right now less than a percent. And oil is at a six-month high this morning at $66 a barrel. Sam Stovall is chief investment strategist at S&P Equity Research. He joins us right now from New York, live. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Steve.
So revised GDP numbers came out for the first quarter. The government says the economy slid, what, 5.7% instead of the 6.1 that it had predicted? Analysts were hoping for a slightly smaller number. How anticlimactic is this number?
Well, it's not all of that climactic, because a lot of economists were projecting about that kind of a revision downward. But certainly it's a confirmation that less bad is good, and that possibly we have experienced the worst, as the forecast for the second quarter GDP is a decline of only 2.5%, a less than 1% decline in the third quarter, and then an advance is forecasted for the fourth quarter.
So last trading day of May, Sam, looking back, do we say thanks for the memories?
Yeah, actually what we say is that share prices blossomed in May, even though we had no showers in April. May was actually fairly strong, up 3.9% for the S&P 500, and quarterly or quarter to date, it is the strongest quarterly gain since the June quarter of 2003, the last time we experienced the beginning of a new bull market.
Let's talk about cars for a moment, Sam. Bloomberg reports this morning that sources tell them that a GM bankruptcy will happen on Monday. GM, of course, a component on the S&P and the Dow. How is bankruptcy going to affect that?
Well, it probably won't affect the S&P 500 all that much. The company now only has a market value of about $700 million versus the $47 billion it experienced about 10 years ago.
We're gonna have to cut it off there. Sam, thank you so much. We appreciate
it. You're welcome.
Have a great weekend. All right,
thanks,
Sam
you.
Stovall, chief investment strategist at S&P Equity Research. Looks like Chrysler will be sold to Italy's Fiat today. A little drama to go along. The bankrupt carmaker is back in court this morning after a marathon session last night. Tamara Keith has the latest.
Some creditors and Chrysler dealers are still objecting strongly to the reorganization plan and sale to Fiat. So even if the deal is approved by the judge today, there will no doubt be appeals. Chrysler appears to be on course for a lightning-fast emergence from bankruptcy. But in some ways, that's where the hard part begins. Fiat has promised new, small, fuel-efficient, attractive Chrysler models. But that will take time, says Sean McElinden. He's the chief economist at the Center for Automotive Research.
Chrysler will have to hibernate a bit for the next 24 months until those new models are ready and sell the products they currently have as best they can. And their market share is going to fall.
It's currently about 10%, and McElinden says he expects it to fall to 7%. The road to recovery still has quite a few rough patches ahead. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
Italian carmaker Fiat isn't showing up to today's talks over the future of GM's European division. Fiat says it still wants to buy the company, but says the German government is making unreasonable financial demands. From the European desk in London, Stephen Beard reports.
Today's meeting in Berlin is supposed to settle a key issue. Which of the companies bidding for GM Europe does the German government prefer? The German government has a key role in this. It's offering billions of dollars of state aid to whichever company wins control. There are now only two bidders in the running, Fiat and the Canadian car parts maker Magna. But Fiat says it's fed up with the government demanding that Fiat pump in more of its own money. Analyst David Bailey says this seems to clear the way for Magna.
It looks increasingly, though, Magna is going to be the preferred bidder, I think, both because Fiat are not going to the talks today, also because Magna actually sweetened their deal this week. So Magna's been trying to do everything possible to please the German government.
The German government demanded more cash from the bidders after the US suddenly announced this week that it was cutting its aid to GM Europe by $400 million. Bailey says with the parent company headed towards Chapter 11, the U.S. seems intent on keeping American taxpayers' money in America. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Friday, May 29th, 2009, at marketplace.org. One of the most successful TV shows in the world is Ugly Betty. It was first made in Colombia, then foreign versions turned up in India, Germany, Russia, and of course here in the United States. But in China, Ugly Betty works at an ad agency instead of a magazine, and corporate sponsors have taken the local version of Ugly Betty to a new level. It's the ultimate product placement vehicle. From Shanghai, here's Marketplace's Scott Tong.
In China, Ugly Wu Di is the character's name, the TV heroine with the thick glasses and bad hair. Here's the trailer. Ugly Wu Di also competes for a guy's attention, but the show's not really about love. It's about Dove, as in skincare. The Dove logo is in the background of many scenes, as well as the foreground, and it's stitched on the actor's clothes. Lipton Tea is another sponsor, and every character drinks the stuff. U.S. viewers might consider this product placement excessive. However,
I don't actually think it's too much for a Chinese audience.
Youth marketing consultant Mary Bergstrom.
We in China haven't been as inundated with product information. So having new brands and being educated consumers is a relatively new concept.
Or, as another observer put it, it's okay for Western advertisers to be gauche in China. Ugly Wu Di premiered last fall to huge ratings. The second season just ended, and producers and sponsors are plugging away on year three. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Germany this week announced its biggest drop in GDP since it began keeping track in the 1970s. Now, that country posted a year-over-year decline of 6.7%, fueled largely by a record slump in exports. Brett Neely has more from Berlin.
At the Menzel Electric Motor Works in Berlin, a worker hand-drills parts that will go into a custom-made electric motor. 80% of the company's products are exported, and last fall, sales collapsed.
We were running at about 130% in the first 9 months of the plant sales, and in the last 3 months, we did perhaps 50% of the plant.
29-year-old Mattis Menzel is the third generation to run this 82-year-old family firm. He had to cut the working hours for 30 of his 100 employees to stay afloat. It's a story being repeated all over Germany. This country of 80 million people shipped out $1.3 trillion worth of goods last year, more than China. Economist Erwin Collier says Germany did plenty of things right.
But the collapse in international demands hits a nation like Germany particularly hard.
Unemployment is on the rise, and some Germans question whether the export-based model of the past 60 years still works. Among them, Axel Weber, the president of Germany's central bank.
Ich selbst halte einen gewissen Ausgleich.
At a recent speech in Hamburg, he said Germany needs to get into services and not just stick to manufacturing. That means more hairdressers, doctors, photographers, anyone who doesn't build stuff. But Weber acknowledges that that won't happen fast. Company owner Mattis Menzel says he's not worried about being too dependent on exports. Sales have already started to bounce back, and he's gotten some important advice from his family about crises.
My grandmother started to work in the company in 1942, and she's still alive. And when I talk to her in these days, she's completely relaxed and says, "Oh, we had so much more difficult times. Don't worry about that."
Though the company wasn't part of the Nazi war effort, the family's factory was bombed a dozen times. Compared to the wartime devastation, Menzel says the current recession is just a hiccup. In Berlin, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
Security experts warn that government and corporate computer networks here in the United States are vulnerable to cyber theft. Today, President Obama has announced a new government plan to identify the threats and to protect vital information, such as military secrets and the operation of the nation's electricity grid, from hackers. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
Hundreds of thousands of times a day, computers full of sensitive information are probed for security breaches by cyber criminals. James Lewis at the Center for Strategic and International Studies says the U.S. record on cybersecurity is poor.
Things are really bad. People keep looking for explosions or terrorism. That's not what you're going to see. This is a spy story. This is about foreign governments, foreign companies stealing information from U.S. companies and U.S. labs.
Lewis hopes the cybersecurity coordinator announced today will be based in the White House. He says that'll keep high-level attention on the challenges to both public and private sector computer networks.
This isn't regulating eBay or Amazon or Google. I really don't care about them. But when you're talking about the electrical grid or the banking sector or telecom, these are places we have to pay attention.
Previous efforts to protect cyber secrets have stumbled over intruding on the privacy of emails and other online communications. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
By the way, the New York Times reports today the Pentagon plans to get in on the act with a new cyberspace military command that would complement the civilian effort. Nuclear fusion has long been considered the holy grail of clean energy. Today in California, the Energy Secretary Stephen Chu and California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger are set to dedicate a $3.5 billion facility aimed at bringing fusion closer to commercial reality. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Sam Eaton.
It's called the National Ignition Facility. The stadium-sized building at the Lawrence Livermore National Lab houses the world's largest laser. Scientists hope to use that laser to ignite a miniature fusion reaction, the same that occurs at the center of the sun. If it works, fusion could become a potential game changer in the quest for abundant carbon-free energy. But Matthew Bunn, an energy policy expert at Harvard, says there's one small problem.
We can't afford to wait for fusion.
He says even if the experiment works, fusion power plants on a commercial scale are still decades away. And Bunn says that's too late to prevent the worst effects of climate change.
We're going to have a huge investment in carbon-free energy that comes on long before fusion becomes available to be part of that picture.
Fusion is also much more expensive compared to other alternative energy sources like solar and wind. And Bunn says the fear is that fusion projects could divert funding away from proven technologies. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
The price of gold seems to be zooming like a rocket. It's up $973 an ounce. And then there are all the folks here in California looking for it. Yeah, as in 2009. Not everyone's yelling, Eureka. Here's Rico Galliano.
The Angeles National Forest is an hour's drive from Los Angeles, up twisty mountain roads. On a Tuesday morning, it's mostly empty, except for a stretch along the San Gabriel River. That's where dozens of prospectors camp out just about every day. Robert Herstrom is one of them.
So how long have you been doing this?
Not very long, a couple months.
And how you doing?
Not very good.
That's putting it mildly. After weeks of standing in the river, sifting soil through what's called a sluice box, Herstrom says he's found a fraction of a gram of gold dust, not worth enough to pay for his trip here. He doesn't mind. He's retired.
It's just recreational. Something to do. Stay out of watching TV.
He could be sincere, or hiding a wounded ego. But one thing's sure, lots of people have suddenly taken interest in this form of recreation. And some of them expect more than a good time. Sherry Rollman is a public affairs officer for the Angeles National Forest. She says over the last few months, gold fever has led to phone calls like this.
The gentleman from the East Coast said he'd spent the last of his savings on some mining equipment and wanted to know where he could go mining here on the Angeles National Forest.
This concerns Rollman, and not just because it's a kind of pathetic story.
Unfortunately, all of the lands on the Angeles were withdrawn from mineral entry by the 1928 Mining Act.
Which means it's illegal to take minerals out of this stretch of the San Gabriel River. The public parts of it anyway, and the area is a patchwork of public and private land. It's hard for prospectors to know when they've strayed from one to the other. The Forest Service says they'll be taking a, quote, closer look to see if regulations are being violated. For now, though, prospectors keep hunting for treasure. One of them, an unemployed machinist named Don, uses this dredger. It sucks soil from the river bottom, hopefully along with gold. Even with the dredge, Don says he only finds an ounce a year, but I understand the allure when he shows me some of his stash.
I find a whole bunch of that.
Kind of looks like a test tube full of, like, gold flakes.
Yeah, that little of this.
Wow, now those are the size of, like, pebbles. That's gorgeous stuff. You want to give me one of those?
No, thanks.
In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
Finally, in Japan, Aoyama Gakuin University is giving away hundreds of iPhones to its students. Graduation present? Hardly. The phones will be used to relay course materials, but most importantly, they'll also be equipped with GPS to check attendance and catch truants. Attendance is a key requirement for graduation. Check us out online at our website, marketplace.org, in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Friday and a very nice weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.